not line up. So, Chris, once Chris gets here, I'm going to have him start the recording. So I do apologize again. Everybody else that was sitting in the other meeting is coming on to join. So I see Colonel Davis. I see Tim Brandt. I see John Rockwell.
Sherry, I'm here too. This is Leon.
Okay. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. In the other meeting, we had myself, Chris Letterman, Travis Connett, Scott Stormo, and Chief Michael Curl. Who else is on the line in here?
David Reed is here.
So Sherry, can we stop for a minute?
Sure.
Let's go ahead and just call the meeting to order. Let's take roll once. So we got a process here so we can just get moving. Sorry about the delay, everyone. We just had a – but now that it's 1:40, we'll just get moving. Sherry, can you go ahead and take roll, please, and we'll call the meeting to order.
Okay. I heard David Reed.
Yes, Sherry.
Who else is on, please?
Hey, Sherry, this is Adam Pierce with the FBI.
Thank you, ASAC Pierce.
Trigg is here.
Thank you, Trigg.
Sherry, this Craig is Tim.
I heard Craig Christensen.
Sherry, this is Tim.
Tim Woodall, thank you.
David gives us on.
Thank you, David.
Joe Pinkston with Motorola.
I'm sorry, who with Motorola?
Joe Pinkston.
Thank you.
Hi, Paolo Capitroni with Motorola.
Thank you, Paolo. Anyone else?
Is this Texar and Cordova of a Clear Air Force Station?
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, aside from those that spoke up, as I said earlier, myself, Sherry Schaefer, Mr. Chris Letterman, Mr. Travis Connett, Mr. Scott Stormo, Deputy Chief Michael Curl, Colonel Davis, Matthew Davis, Mr. Tim Brandt, Mr. John Rockwell, anyone else? That concludes the roll call.
All right, thank you, Sherry. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Sorry about the delay again. Let's go ahead and move on to opening statements and other announcements. Any members of the executive board have any opening statements and or other announcements they'd like to make?
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Pudge here. Sir, I've been apprised by Mr. Woodall through the state of the some of the DOD members being in arrears as far as payments, and we are working to get that fixed. I just wanted to let everybody know that would be fixed as soon as the funding becomes available with this fiscal year's funds through the federal government. Over.
Okay, thanks, Colonel. I appreciate that. Money's always good. Lord knows we've been in arrears before, too, so no problem. Does any other members or anybody online have any opening statements or other announcements they'd like to make?
Yeah, this is Mr. Woodall. On the agenda, it does not show the Motorola lifecycle presentation. I would recommend making a motion that you permit them to provide that up front before we discuss old business. And then we can dismiss them and then continue the meeting with old business and discussions with regard to their presentation.
Okay. So you're saying move them, instead of new business, move them up after approval of previous minutes or
meeting? Yes, sir. Yeah, Colonel Davis has a conflicting meeting at 2 o'clock, and so wanted to
Perfect.
Get that briefing completed before he departs.
We'll get the Colonel out of here. All right. Make a motion to move the Motorola presentation up before old business. Do I have a second?
And second from Pudge Davis, please.
Thanks, Colonel. And we'll just, I guess we'll vote by anybody dissent to that. Otherwise, we'll see it as passed. Does any other members have any issue with that? All right, sounds like the motion passed. So let's move on to approval of previous meeting minutes. We have reviewed the draft of the meeting minutes from the October Executive Council meeting. I make a motion to approve the minutes to the council members for their consideration.
And Pudge Davis will second that.
All right, Colonel, thank you. Does anybody have any, anybody not want to approve the minutes or make any corrections to the minutes? Okay, hearing none, let's move on to the ALMR life cycle planning update by Motorola. And I guess, Scott, are you running this or who's running this?
Motorola will be briefing it, sir. The slides are showing for everybody that's on through the computer.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tim Brandt with Motorola. I'm going to be doing the briefing. Please ask questions as we go along. If there's anything that's confusing or you want to have further discussion, I'll make myself available either right now or later. So I'll just, with that, get into it. Typically, once a year, we're asked to do this briefing to provide an update on the life cycle planning aspects of keeping the ALMR network current and sustainable. So that's the focus here. Just quickly, some background, kind of just backing up a few years here. Basically, the system is an information system, and just like any other information system that runs business or government, we want to make sure that everybody understands that the information system that you have, which happens to be called ALMR, does need to be kept current, much in line with what we do today in other information systems around the organizations that we all belong to. So a couple of quick things. Typically, when you see an information system, it's a significant investment in capital expenditure. Typically needs some kind of a staff to deploy it, maintain it, and just to manage it. Ultimately, there is a cost of ownership that's quite significant. It's not so significant for ALMR if you look at it over the total investment that's been made over the last 14 plus years. Typically, information systems require a long life. Expectation is anywhere from 5 to 10, even longer, years. And when we do these updates, typically, we're going to do a periodic software and hardware refresh of key components of the network. So things like servers, switches, IT products, as well as all of the software that runs on the network. And oftentimes, we're beholden, Motorola is, to some of the vendors I show on this slide three. These vendors are typically providing a life cycle support for each of their individual products and or services. So Motorola takes all this technology, integrates it with our technology to make what you guys know as the land mobile radio system. So the focus here is really how do we keep these third party products, hardware and software current so that we can go ahead and keep your system fully supportable. If you look at the effect of time on information technology, we try to paint a picture of, you know, you're either green, which means you're good to go, you're approaching the yellow zone, which means doesn't mean the system quits working or the technology quits working. It just means you're starting to take on some risk, because usually 3 to 5 years is a long time when you talk about software and off-the-shelf commodity IT products that we're using. And then when you get into the red zone, usually you're 5 or 6 years out. And by that time, most of the folks or the companies that supply us are looking at winding down or have already shut off full support for their products that we've integrated. So the point here is that we want to keep you in the green zone or on the edge of the yellow zone so that you don't take on unneeded risk and that you are able to receive the benefits of basically pushing the button and be able to talk whenever it's needed. There's a lot that goes into this, but this is a very condensed view of time effects on the technology. So our goal is to keep you in the green zone. When we talk about some more background from a life cycle sustainment perspective, there are typically two approaches that most of our customers follow. One is the capital expenditure view, where we're going to build out technology on our customer's behalf based on capital expenditures. So, you know, when the system was initially purchased, we built the system out. There were control centers, dispatch centers, radio tower sites, that sort of thing. Over time, the system has expanded with new sites, new feature sets. We've done upgrades. And ultimately, we're doing this ongoing over the last 14 years. To get to a point where if we look at system upgrades, the releases themselves, we first installed the system in 2006. We've done expansions since then, and then last we've really done multiple upgrades of the entire network software and the commodity IT technology. So we did an upgrade 7 years after the initial release and installation and commissioning of the system. So we were doing an upgrade on 7-year-old technology, which at that point in time was in the red zone. And then, 2019, we did another upgrade of the network, upgrading software, replacing, IT equipment was no longer supportable at that time. And then, at that point, we were at a 6-year-old technology, which was again in the red zone. So we're trying to look into the future and say, how do we help the ALMR system users have the best technology that's feasible and affordable? And what's missing in our approach is really an OPEX approach of ongoing updates on a regular basis. So typically, we offer biennial updates through a program called SUA or SUA, and I'll get into that in just a second. That's missing from the overall planning process and consequently has caused some issues over time. The folks that are funding the ALMR network really are missing out on some of the discounts, inherent in doing that sort of approach, that OPEX approach. Ultimately, the view we have too is from a planning perspective. Every year we come together and plan, we assist the state and the Muni and the DOD to do planning. We have to rework our plan, recalculate the future costs, and spend a lot of energy doing that with the hopes of getting some kind of a funding cycle so we can procure the next upgrade. What we're trying to look at is how do we do that in a more efficient, more predictable, more stable manner. And that's really the missing piece is the system upgrade agreement, which is done biennially. And it's really a subscription approach. We calculate the cost of doing the upgrade. And ultimately we have a price point that, the various key stakeholders on the network, the Muni, the DOD, and the state can lock in Motorola to a price point that we hold for as many years, typically upwards of 10 years, so that you enjoy the best pricing based on today's pricing and, kind of a guarantee that it's not going to change unless you add more to the network. Generally, the cost of that, in the case of the ALMR network, when you look at expenditures up to this point, it comes in under 2% per year what was originally spent on the network. And if you take that and go back to the CapEx approach of doing upgrades, which we did in 2013 and in 2019, you can see approximately 15% savings by locking us into a price and committing to a longer term sustainment plan. So that's really the part that we wanted to bring to everybody's attention, is that we've been supporting the network for over 14 years through regular updates, software refreshes, but we've done it more on a CapEx, wait until it turns red, and then go out and get the funds and do the upgrade. So that's the least efficient way to do it, and the most volatile and least predictable. We're trying to focus on how do we get the approach of doing an upgrade every several years, every 2 years, and then predicting the costs and flattening those costs out, rather than having peaks and valleys in the budget process. So I'm going to pause right there before I go any further. Are there any questions up to this point? Okay.
Hey, this is Pudge Davis. I don't have any questions. I fully support considering and creating dialogue, especially with the council, on this, especially if we can get a more robust system at a lower price point. I think that benefits everyone, to include Motorola. So, I definitely think more dialogue is in the future, and, I appreciate being able to see this, and I've got to go to another meeting, and Mr. Woodall will stand in for me on that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So just recap of the status of the system from a planning perspective and life cycle management perspective. Snapshot of where each of the key stakeholders is at. What's going on, what's contractually happening, and you know, what's being planned. So from a state perspective, last year the state signed a contract with Motorola to replace legacy, what are called Quantar base radios. So these are radios that are over 28 years old in terms of technology. So we replaced them, or we are replacing them as we speak, with the GTR 8000 equipment. So that's significant investment, and it's something that was holding back the entire network as far as keeping it current. We're also under contract to perform an upgrade once those new radios are installed to a release that's coming called Astro 2020.1. Along with that, there will be new features to expand the capacity of the network, as well as subscriber radios needing to be replaced. That's something that needs to be done. Some have been done already, so several hundred that were end of life. Now we're talking about radio technology that's almost 20 years old. In some cases, I think these were the original radios purchased back in the early 2000s. So they're well beyond end of life. They still function, but they're really not supported any longer in terms of repair or replacement. The new radio that certain key stakeholders have been purchasing is called the Apex radio. Some of those have been upgraded to do TDMA, which is a technology that allows you to have more capacity on the network. So those are very high-level points. There's a lot of detail behind each of these bullets, but we won't be going into those today. But ultimately, we have made good progress with the state. When we switch over to the municipality of Anchorage, moving forward kind of an approach, we've gotten new subscribers to the municipality, 600, and currently they are upgrading the network from the older microwave to Ethernet capable technology, so that one of the things they need to do is modernize the network to move to Ethernet capable IP simulcast. So some points that were brought up in our discussions and planning, we want to move forward. Some things need to take place. One is MOA needs to take care of getting their simulcast architecture upgraded. and they also need to get funding for doing the next upgrade. And to point out to everybody, that if there are delays in funding from a Motorola perspective, we need to have contracts in place in order to move forward and get everybody on the schedule to do the upgrade. So that's, I think we've had lots of discussions about that, but that's the status as I understand it as of today. So some good things happening there and a few things that need to happen. Last, Department of Defense, we have provided, Motorola has provided them an upgrade proposal to upgrade their portion of the network to the next release, as well as microwave upgrade. These things are absolutely necessary in order to move forward. So, you know, obviously funding needs to be had for doing the upgrades to replace the microwave network, as well as provide for software and IT component change out. Again, delays in funding will basically stop our scheduled progress until we get the funding and the contracts signed so that we can get them on the schedule. So all the key players on the network need to be in sync in order to move forward. And these right now are the critical path from a very high level funding perspective. Next is talking about some of the key lifecycle components. So from a support perspective, there's a lot of stuff on this chart, but I'll go through the top row talks about what release is available in a given calendar year. Currently, Motorola is targeting getting the ALMR network up to release 2020.1, which just came out in June of 2020. So we're on target to do that pending getting the funding and the contract signed. To point out a few things about where currently the system is at, today the ALMR system is on ASTRO release 7.17.3, which the key takeaway here is it is now in the yellow zone. And there's 3 years of support for it. So, there's limitations on what Motorola can do going forward as far as expansion and, cybersecurity. So from a cybersecurity standpoint, which probably one of the key points of this, meeting is that currently we are patching, providing cybersecurity support, but officially, it's being done on an a best effort basis. The technology that we're using right now is 4 years old, so it is now in the red zone as far as availability. As of today, we're still able to provide all the critical patching that's required. But that patching support service needs to be reevaluated in the next contract period, because we will start seeing limitations and cancellations from our third-party suppliers, and then we will fall into best commercial effort approach. We want to make sure that everybody's aware of that, and I think from previous discussions in the working groups, we are aware of that. Next topic, circuit-based simulcast. I mentioned that briefly. The key point here is that until that's done and upgraded, the current release that the entire system is on is the last release that supports that technology. So until that gets upgraded, we can't move forward to the next release of ASTRO 2020.1. So there's a few things in here that are going to potentially hold up moving forward if the funding isn't reached and contracted soon. The other topic is somewhat release independent. I mentioned it briefly before, but it's the XTS and XTL radios that are in the vehicles and in people's hands. These radios are now, for all intents and purposes, they're obsolete. They still operate on the network, but should something go wrong with one, there's no repair availability for them. It's just a replacement with a spare or purchasing a new radio. So from a planning perspective, It's outside the infrastructure, network infrastructure, but it's very critical that from a long-term planning perspective that that's addressed. Otherwise, you'll find yourself at some point radios will start failing and you'll have to have a plan in place to mitigate. Looking out over the horizon, you still have a few years, but I bring it up because it's now pertinent to a planning process is that the MCC 7500 console, that's the operator position that people use to dispatch and communicate to all the radio users. That technology platform is planned to be discontinued from supportability in calendar year 2025, still 4 years away, but from a planning perspective, it's not that far out. So we want to bring awareness to that, that as we go forward, there are occasional capital expenditures that need to be made to keep the network supported and fully operational. And then there's actually the OpEx approach where we're looking at maintenance services, regular software updates, system monitoring, that sort of thing. The last piece of discussion is the GTR 8000. Those are the radio tower site equipment. As of today, that's still green for the foreseeable future. So, you know, projecting at least 8 to 10 years out before anything needs to be replaced there. So, again, high level view, and we want to make sure everybody's aware that the critical path really is getting the contracts and getting the upgrade plan so that we can move forward and get you on a current cybersecurity robust release. And I'll pause right there before I go to my next slide if there are any questions or comments. Okay, moving on. So, to conclude, we have some recommendations as to what we need to do move forward. One is, I've mentioned it multiple times, secure funding to get the items that are going to hold us back from doing the next system-wide upgrade. Those need to be taken care of. Second, and in parallel, we need to get on the schedule to do the upgrade because what we're talking about is a you know, multi-month exercise that needs to be penciled in to conform with the weather, the narrow time window that we have for weather, and also making sure that we're all aware that the cybersecurity becomes less feasible as time goes on. Not the end of the world. I don't want to threaten anybody, but I, you know, what would happen if somebody were to inject into the network and you know, ransomware or some of the bad things that you hear about, we're going to be approaching a point where those vulnerabilities are going to start being a reality if someone were to compromise the network. The last thing really is how do we, going forward, get on a multi-year SUA contract? We want to keep the system current. Obviously, there's a huge investment that's been made. We want to make sure it's secure. And, you know, from talking to all the different teams, the three key partners on the network, there's a lot of planning and budgets that need to happen. And the effort to do that is quite significant. And it's quite challenging to coordinate, you know, literally three different funding cycles and then the procurement and everything that goes along with that. We've been doing that for quite a few years, but when you look at the time we spend, and once we go out and get funds, things may have changed because one of the key partners on the network couldn't secure funding. Oftentimes that impacts our planning and consequently has a price associated with changes that need to take place. So we want to hopefully figure out a way to secure a better approach for planning and funding. And really the last recommendation is planning. How do we keep everything out in front of the folks that need to fund the projects? It's through planning and coming up with information that, you know, help decision makers, and that's what we're here to help you do. So with that, I'm open for questions or any comments you have. Now's the time.
Yeah, Jim, this, Jim, the I guess a foot stomper is that if we fail to fund in 2021, the current proposals and costs that we have projected for the 2021 upgrade would increase in 2022, correct?
That's correct. And we have sent out the over the high level spreadsheet of budgeting costs. If I think everybody got that, but I'm guessing you all can review that. And if you have questions, to reach out to Motorola for you know clarification. But yes, if basically time erodes everything, and if we have to come back a year from now because we didn't get funds, it'll be, you know, a reevaluation of what needs to happen timing wise. And generally there's an additional cost that goes with that because there's more stuff that needs to be refreshed. And that's the challenge I think we've all been facing is as we help you plan for the future. We know plans change. We know funding doesn't always happen. But there are, you know, there are consequences to that, both financially and operationally at some point.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, this is Leon. Does anybody have any questions for Motorola? Okay, thank you. I appreciate the presentation. We're going to move on to old business. Mr. Stormo, Scott, can you just give us a quick update on the Quantar replacement and where we are with that?
Sure. We continue to meet weekly with Motorola. Haven't had anybody here for about a month, and it would be another month, I think, before they've got some STs back up to continue with installing the equipment at the sites. But we are continuing to make progress, obviously considerably slower than desired, mostly because of what's happened with the pandemic, which has not only made travel and difficult, it's impacted some of the manufacturing equipment process as well. So. But we are continuing on as probably well as we can be expected to do under the current pandemic environment. We're working on stuff on the side. There's the 1900 TDMA upgrades to existing Apex radios. We're working with Motorola to get that software in our hands, and then we'll be working with all the state and local agencies to figure out how to get their radios upgraded to work TDMA. And we're also traveling around the state at the moment. We're looking at towers, trying to get structural analysis is done for the towers to accommodate the newer, larger, heavier antennas that will come with this upgrade. So a lot of work going on by both Motorola and their subcontractors and by the state. So.
Okay, Scott, do you have and I understand all that with the pandemic and travel, I agree with that, but do you have an adjusted sort of completion time or a time you guys are looking at for completion of the GTR project?
Well, I think it's still optimistically hoping that it will be done, you know, by the end of this summer season. There's the large second shipment of equipment. It should all be here, the last of it by March. So at that point, we've got all the RF site equipment in the state, and it'll just be a matter of getting it scheduled and installed. And they're expectation, obviously, with the helicopter sites, is that all that work would be happening during the summer months. So we hopefully will have this all done by fall. And if the DOD and the Muni have a contract to do the upgrade, then the upgrade could start sometime after that.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Scott. Does anybody have any questions for Scott regarding the Quantars and GTR replacement? Okay, I don't have any follow-up for the other old business B and C. Really, nothing changed with the 911 working group in terms of interoperability or anything to do with ALMR. And in terms of a long-term cost share solution, that's our position hasn't changed as well. I know moving on to Section D, we talked about the DOD contract for system upgrade. Mr. Woodall, do you have any update on that?
No, we are in conversations, and the briefing that was just given helps leadership understand what, you know, as you change personnel every 1 to 2 years, ALMR is a new understanding. It's a little bit difficult for new people to grasp the total understanding of the in-sync upgrades, the requirements, those sorts of things. So we're working through all of that. We have, over a number of years since the last upgrade, in 17 projected upgrade costs for last year, the year for starting in 2018, actually 2018, 2019, 2020. So the services weren't unaware that there was upgrade requirements, but there are different funding avenues that were taking place. Some of them came through, and some of them did not. So we have some agencies that are funded, and some agencies are not, but as we know, all have to be funded. So we're trying to work through that judiciously to justify any unfunded requirement.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Royal. Does anybody have anything else on old business they'd like to comment on or bring up or speak to? Okay, moving on, we have Section 5 User Council update. Mr. Rockwell, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Commissioner Morgan. On the agenda, it has vacant positions for non-DOD. We have received a letter recommending two persons for those positions. Mr. Ross Atkinson as the primary representative from BLM, and Mr. Timothy Boyce, the alternate representative from National Park Service. So at this time, Chair, I would request that a motion be made to approve the appointment of Mr. Ross Atkinson of BLM Alaska Fire Service and Mr. Timothy Bryce of the National Park Service as new primary and alternate federal non-DOD Department of Interior representatives to ALMR User Council, respectively.
This is Adam Pierce. I'll second.
Thank you, Adam. Anybody dissent? I forgot the term of how we do that. Appears that we all agree. Mr. Rockwell, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. And that's the update from the User Council regarding the vacant positions. If there are no questions, I'll move it back to you, sir.
Okay. Anybody have any questions for Mr. Rockwell? All right. We'll move to Section 6, the OMO. Mr. Letterman, do you take it away?
Thank you, Chair, Deputy Commissioner. I'd like to start off with the interoperability zone update. I'm happy to report that we pushed the console updates, or I should say the the SMO pushed the console updates yesterday morning. We had no issues. The SMO did make some proactive calls out to several of the dispatch agencies and just confirmed that everything was happy and there were no problems, and it's good to be moving forward on that. I'd also share that we have we've sent out the transition smart cards. These are sort of the if you call it a cheat sheet or whatever, gives folks the old versus the new in kind of a really easy to read format. These have been sent out to the dispatch centers, all the agencies on ALMR, and of course we have started an outreach project where we're discussing things with vendors now, and so we have shared all that information with vendors. These would be the vendors that are predominantly programming end-user subscriber units, so it's important that we keep them in our thoughts as we move forward. And that's all I have on that. Any questions? Okay. The next item is just a really quick, the service level agreement. This has been sent to AFEA for signature. And as soon as that's done, we'll be finished with suspense on that.
This is Adam Pierce. I can speak to that very quickly. I'm meeting with Gibby Kokonowski, Department of Energy, the senior advisor, this afternoon in approximately 2 hours to get that signature, and I'll get that over to Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, sir.
No problem.
The next point that I'd like to report on is our new AlaskaLandMobileRadio.org website. We successfully launched this on December 27th. We do ask that you take a look at it, you know, kick the tires. We're always open to hear constructive feedback. If there's things that are obvious misses that, you know, it's kind of easy to get blinders on when you're in the throes of doing something like that. So if there's something that you see that, you know, we missed, please let us know. But the initial feedback we've received so far has been all positive. Any questions on the website? Okay. Moving on to training. This is something that we have been able to do under the new contract. We held our first virtual training classes last year. We had one on November 18th, which was sort of an ALMR 101, an introduction to ALMR. And then we followed that up in December with a radio walk around on December 15th. Both of those were recorded, and they've been posted out to the website under training and presentations menu. So anyone that wasn't present can easily go out there and watch that. And then I'll give a little brief update for what we're looking at here in the first, maybe even into the second quarter. Some of the feedback that I received during my outreach project is that, you know, folks are really interested in working through some kind of a scenario, kind of a training. And in speaking with our trainer earlier this month, we were thinking of some interrupt zone scenario training to help kind of cement the fact that we've moved over from the IC to interrupt and coming up with some scenarios. The other primary thing that we're going to try and tackle is some interactive programming guidance for the local agencies that may have someone in their agency that is a programmer that have, you know, the cables and the necessary equipment to do programming, but they're just looking for a little bit of guidance. So we're in the process of trying to figure out the best way to do that in an interactive fashion, utilizing Teams and video cameras, etc. So we're excited to be able to offer that. Any questions on training? Okay. An update on the logo contest. We have received entries, and those have been shared with you in today's packet. We're asking that each of the executive council members take a look at them and rank them in kind of a rating. We're going to be sending out a online voting link. You'll get that this afternoon in your inbox. And once we have a kind of a clear and present winner, we will send that over to our design team and have them make some professional renderings. And then we'll send that back around to the executive council for voting. Any questions on the logo contest? Okay. The next point that I have is outreach and awareness. I've completed contacting local agencies, and now I'm going to start working on the state agencies. And the other thing I think I already previously mentioned, we're also starting an outreach effort with our vendors, those folks that are providing service to the ALMR user community. So far, we've met with four, and we have one more to meet with tomorrow, and then a couple more that we've learned about in our discussions with some of these vendors. So that's been received well, and I think it will do the community good, so that everyone can stay on kind of the same page. We're going to try and do this quarterly with those vendors moving forward. Annual reports have been approved by the user council and have been included in your packet. These are the annual business case, the user council, annual assessment on the system operations and management, performance management, and the annual information assurance report of findings. Those are shared for approval, for final approval by the EC. Questions on annual reports? Okay. I'll conclude my section with some December system metrics. For group calls, we did 1,071,383 for December of 2020. That's up from 2019, about 6,000 additional group calls. On the push-to-talks, at 1.9 million, and from the 2019, we had increased push-to-talks by 30,000. Looking at the busies, the system busies, for the month of December 2020, we had 212. For 2019, we had 508, so we reduced busies by 296. And subscriber count. At the end of the year in December, we ended with 23,057. Subscriber count from 2019 was 22,191. So we've added 866 subscriber units to the network the past year. Any questions on system metrics? Okay. Deputy Commissioner, I'd give you the floor.
Thanks, Chris. That's good information, especially with the subscribers going up. We'll move along now. Well, let me back up. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Letterman and the OMO? Okay, we're going to move on to new business, and we don't have any listed, so I'll open it up to our executive members, executive council members, and associate members. Anybody have any new business they'd like to bring up?
Yeah, this is Mr. Woodall. I think at some point, whether we do it under this meeting, I recommend perhaps the next meeting, but in light of the briefing that Motorola gave in the life cycle approach, and the fact that we typically as a cooperative are most of the majority of our upgrades are behind behind schedule or right on the edge of non-support, we're in the red, either deep in the yellow or in the red, that that the Executive Council consider strongly endorsing the OPEX approach for funding the SUA program, meaning that added to our annual maintenance costs is the SUA costs and paid for under from an operational perspective versus every when we're deep in the yellow or deep in the red, looking at a CapEx, capital expenditure approach. I don't believe we can mandate it, but I think the Executive Council could strongly recommend it and advise that it should be the norm, and then we can perhaps use that to move agencies to look at their operational budgeting and ensuring that they move towards that approach. That, of course, is open for discussion.
This is Leon. We can certainly schedule something for the next meeting. In fact, I think we should do that. I'll just point out the reality that we're all living with is that we all have our own independent budget cycles. We all have our own sort of processes we have to do to acquire both operating funds and capital funds. I think this last year has shown us that when we had the GTR replacement capital cost, that was a pretty bloody fight getting through at least our state legislature. We see that we still have delays in DOD funding and MOA funding, and it's not to cast aspersions on anybody because, like I said, as you know, state, we have our delays as well. So I get the CapEx and OpEx issue, but the issue is where this consortium is independently funded by three totally different entities and three totally different budget cycles. So I think that is what we should consider as we walk into that kind of discussion here at our next meeting in April, is how can we sort of work, at least recommend to work towards alignment within our respective governmental structures when it comes to budgeting for ALMR.
Absolutely, and because of those complexities, it really tends to support an OPEX approach if we could normalize that way of funding our system maintenance and upgrades. That would certainly assist, I think, in resolving the complexities that we have, because everyone would be on an annual, as we are for maintenance, we would be on an annual maintenance/upgrade approach. But we really need to look at it and discuss it and examine the strategy and then perhaps make a recommendation one way or other. Again, as we all know, all those funding processes are independent. So, but I think a strong advocacy may help in persuading or at least opening that conversation up in the various levels of government that have to look at that.
Okay, does anybody have any other comments or issues? I guess we would sort of use this new business time to sort of just query the group if there's any other comments, concerns, critiques, or issues they want to bring up for this meeting.
Deputy Commissioner, this is Chris Letterman. I would just like to maybe tab off of what Mr. Tim Woodall said and include in that next meeting discussion the idea of giving folks a timeline for switching to TDMA radios. I think we briefly discussed that and at the last meeting, and I think that one of the things that prompted today's Motorola presentation and painting the life cycle for the executive council, but we also have the user community to consider, and moving to TDMA and looking for, you know, what that glide slope looks like. We've heard some input from the locals and the municipalities around their funding calendars and what would be beneficial for them to get in to those queues. So I would just say, can we maybe make that part of that conversation in April?
Yeah, we certainly can. Forgive me for not knowing this, but have you made that presentation to the user council?
The user council has been briefed on this, yes. And I think what we've heard predominantly is 5 years seems to be the going. I think that there are other agencies that are able to lean into that a little bit and maybe look at a 3-year time horizon. But I think, again, if we had something from the executive council that kind of backed up that idea and gave us a goal state, end date, whatever you want to call it, that we can help the municipalities with their own budgeting processes.
So can you, Chris, can you then plan on having a TDMA specific, specific brief on TDMA for the group in April?
Yes, sir, I can do that.
Okay, so we'll table that to April. So it does look like our next meeting is scheduled for April 15th at 1:30 at the here at Tudor Road. I would like to try to do that in person. Obviously, it's going to be how many arms get needles for vaccines dependent, but I think it'd be an admirable goal to at least try to get our Anchorage-based folks there in the building together. If not, I appreciate you guys switching over to Teams. I do like this platform pretty well. So we'll just play that by ear as always. And other than that, I'm going to move to adjourn the meeting, and I would be looking for a second from one of our executive or associate members.
This is Mr. Woodall seconding on behalf of Colonel Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Woodall. I guess one final time for our members, is there any issues they'd like to bring up before we adjourn? Okay, hearing none, we'll go ahead and close it out. Thank you, everybody, for your time, and we'll see you guys in April.
Thank you, Leon.
Thanks, Leon.